that's the bottom line in all that we do, is it as simple as, well, the simplest, Occam's razor. Hey, this is Father Voskin. I am a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, everything in between. Yeah, there's a lot in between. This is episode number 492 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Can you believe it's already November? November of 2017? Yeah, just a couple more weeks and we're going to be hearing Christmas carols and we're going to be ready for the holiday season. We actually kicked off Advent a little bit early with our Bible study group. I'll be telling you all about that. Got so much to share with you today, including a little bit of Occam's razor. Got it. It's like weird how it all came together as we were putting the notes together for today's show. I'm going to share that with you in a few moments. But first, let me take care of some house cleaning issues. I was going to say housekeeping, but it's both housekeeping and house cleaning. Okay. Thank you. First of all, thank you to all of you who called in, who wrote in and made us aware about the wrong file being sent out last week. There was a small little glitch. Actually, two glitches, one of which we're still investigating and can't even figure out. One we did figure out. So it depends on how you get your podcast, how you receive The Next Step. Those of you who received the email, you received the wrong file. You received number 489 rather than 491. Okay, and thanks for letting us know. It's been corrected. It's been fixed. But this is always something you can remember whenever something, and hopefully it doesn't happen again, but what if and when it does happen, you just go to the main mothership, inhisshoes.org, and the most accurate, the most recent podcast will be there, inhisshoes.org. But because we use podcatchers, which are basically they go around and they sniff around the internet and they see if there's a new podcast, and then they publish it, or they let the world know. And so because we use podcatchers, we got a few wrong emails. Now, that's about the 489. In that whole mess, simultaneously, an episode from last May was sent out to people, and that one we still can't figure out why. But an episode from May was sent out, and we heard a lot of comments about that, people saying that, hey, why is this being sent out? What are you guys doing? The number's wrong, and so on and so on and so on. It's always good to hear those complaints because it makes you realize how much loved we are and how appreciated we are, how much we're out there. So thank you very much for letting us know about that. And once again, remember, it's inhisshoes.org, and that will have always, at that website, you'll find the most recent copy of The Next Step, or most recent episode. Now, this morning, I did a live, a Facebook live. I don't think I've done one, although the people at the diocese told me we did one last year. But anyway, it was kind of fun this morning. We are doing season two of the Armenian Church 101, AC 101. And so we put it out there for people to let us know what they'd like us to talk about as far as AC 101. So do watch that. That's on the Facebook page of the Western Diocese. So now, if you didn't hear last week's Next Step, I just told you how to get 491. That's last week's. If you did hear it, you know that there was another mistake inside of it. And this one I take complete blame for, okay? The name of the song was Antaram Zarig. The name of the performer, of the artist, is Isabel Bayraktarian. Inadvertently, by mistake, maybe tiredness, or maybe just I just blew it, okay? I said Elizabeth. Honest mistake, okay? And I'll live up to it. Her name, of course, is Isabel Bayraktarian, and we have featured her beautiful voice many times on The Next Step, and we used it last week to demonstrate the importance of finding and achieving harmony. And if you didn't catch it last week, please do listen. That's number 491 of The Next Step. And, you know, it's fair to binge on The Next Step. I know I've told you about people that I've met that are binging. I met a lot more last week because because of the popularity of the videos and just by nature of the videos being out there, people get hooked on the videos and then they find out, oh, there's a show called The Next Step. So I met a couple other people that have been binging on The Next Steps, and I'll throw that out at you too. Yes. And actually, we did a binge ourselves. We binged on Designated Survivor. It's an exciting show. I don't think it's as exciting as the first season, but just before we left for Armenia, we watched the last episode, and there was a couple nights ago, and we said, uh-oh, Designated Survivor, what happened? It's been like 3-4 weeks since we've been out of the country. We hadn't seen Designated Survivor, so we had to catch up. So we'll be with the regular season. So the other night, we watched 2 or 3, 4 episodes of Designated Survivor. And maybe that's the reason why I thought, it's not as exciting. After, you know, a few episodes, you kind of get tired. But hopefully you don't get tired when listening to The Next Step. And certainly you won't get tired. I hope you'll be in awe today of what I have to share with you, because we're going to be talking about some awe-inspiring things. And just in general, where we're at. I heard from some comments last week after we talked about the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. And a dear listener, let's see, from Niagara Falls. Interesting, huh? So there's people up in Niagara Falls that live there. They're not just tourists there, right? I've never been there myself. So anyway, Tanya writes to us from Niagara Falls. She shared with us a recent article that appeared in the Religion News Service, When Americans Tried to Reunite Christianity. And this is going to be our starting point today. I'm going to be talking about some amazing things, things that will leave you in awe, guaranteed. You will be left in awe, especially after our song of the day today. Let's start over here, because there's a method to the madness, okay? Anyway, when Americans tried and failed to reunite Christianity. Of course, last week we were talking about the split. We were talking about the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation and so on. And so this is what Tanya shares with us. 500 years ago, Martin Luther, a German monk, initiated a split in Christianity that came to be known as the Protestant Reformation. After the Reformation, deep divisions between Protestants and Catholics contributed to wars, hostility, and violence in Europe and America. For centuries, each side denounced the other and sought to convert its followers. Then, in the early 1900s, ambitious Protestants in the United States... Okay, we were talking last week about ecumenism. Listen to this. In the early 1900s, ambitious Protestants in the United States attempted the unthinkable. Building on ideas circulating in Europe, they took charge of an effort to negotiate the reunion of Christianity. They failed, of course. Strange as it might now seem, their effort is nevertheless informative, and here's why. Now listen to this. This is really, really important. By 1900, atheists and agnostics were becoming more prominent in the United States. Anxious Protestant religious leaders started to argue in favor of the United Christianity to stop the spread of these ideas. So it wasn't about bringing Christians together as much as it was to stop the atheist ideas. Noted theologian and fellow at Yale, Newman Smith, complained at the time about religion's lost authority in family, community, and intellectual life. He declared a Christianity divided in its own house against itself could not survive. And I really appreciated this article because it speaks not only to the broader picture of the Christian church, it also speaks to the unique set of circumstances within the Armenian Orthodox Church. And I'm talking about a split that takes place that is purely administrative, but at the same time, it has overtones that will separate us along cultural boundaries too. Let me continue. I won't do the whole article. Definitely this article, as well as everything we speak about, will be in the show notes today. In response, in 1910, a very small but highly influential group comprising theologians, including Smith, as well as ministers of prestigious churches and noted business professionals, committed themselves to Christian unity. For this group, unity meant more than cooperation or mutual understanding. It meant the actual reunion of Protestantism and Catholicism. Now, reuniting the churches is a very noble task. And in fact, if you believe in the sanctity of the church, you find it that it's more than just noble. It's an essential task, right? It's essential. But what is the obstacle? What are the obstacles? Why is it taking so long? I always think about that because, you know what? I've shared this with Next Steppers many times. Look at the Armenian church, right? You have Armenian Protestantism, which has taken a good hit at the Armenian church because of its lack of emphasizing the Bible, lack of spirituality, and so on and so on. You have Armenian Catholics that are out there and they're trying to divide and basically saying that, well, we're under the Pope and we have this understanding. If you were to put all these people together and say, okay, what's your bottom line? What's your mission? And it is to serve Christ, right? Then why aren't you all together? And this is where I'm going to introduce to you something very, very, very striking to me. It hit me as I was reading this article that Tanya had sent. And that's the concept of Occam's razor. If you're familiar with this, this is a law of parsimony, and it is a problem-solving principle attributed to William Occam, a 13th century figure. Okay, he was an English Franciscan friar, a scholastic philosopher, and a theologian. His principle states that among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. In other words, least resistance, right? So we start getting very grand on the large scale, and we say that, okay, Protestantism, they went against Catholicism, and, well, you know, Catholicism has come back to this place, or in Armenian case, or in Greek case, whatever it is, Greeks and Armenians, you guys argued over the Fourth Ecumenical Council, over Chalcedon, and rejected it, and there's only three councils, now there's seven. But when you sit down and you realize that really, as a church, you should be together on this. But what's the problem here? And I would like to invoke Occam's razor. In other words, the least resistance, the fewest assumptions. Is it just a problem of real estate? Oh, man, did I really say that? Yes. Isn't that the simple answer to this? Who's going to give up real estate? I mean, we all want to get spiritual. We want to say that this is what we believe, this is what you believe, and now we're going to find common ground. But who's going to give up real estate? I have a church here. It belongs to me. Remember that? Belonging. Yes. I paid money for it. That money, the sweat of my brow. And so if we invoked Occam's razor at this point, right? In other words, the least fewest assumptions. Why assume that it's something more than money? It's just real estate. Who's going to give up real estate? I mean, I could talk to you in terms of the Armenian church. I mean, at what point, who's going to say, I'm going to give up my properties when it comes to prelacy, diocese issues? When it comes to Etchmiadzin or Antilias, they have their properties. Who's going to give up properties? Hey, think about it with you and your neighbor, okay? You argue over a fence, and that fence is between you and your neighbor's property, and unsure where it's going to be. Who's going to give up that extra inch, that 2 inches, that 3 inches? Who's going to give up that extra foot, right? Oh, it belongs to you. And this idea of belonging has kept us away from true unity. And I think that's how simple it is. And it hit me this week because there is a parable that we used in our Bible study, and I want to share it with you right now. It's the parable of the sower. Interesting parable. Because, you know, Jesus uses parables throughout his ministry. It's his preferred means of teaching, right? The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant who finds the pearl. And when he finds this beautiful pearl of incredible value, he sells everything that he has so that he can attain and he can have that pearl. Possession, right? Now, you can interpret that in many ways. Possession is one of them, right? You could also interpret it as the kingdom of heaven, of selling everything that you have, of losing yourself so that you can attain something that is priceless. So many ways you can look at this, and you can make arguments for it. Well, Jesus gives this parable of the sower, and here's the interesting thing about it, that it has an explanation. In so many of the other parables, there's no explanation, right? Jesus just says, you know, or maybe a metaphor. He says, you know, bring the little children to me, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. What do you mean, to such belongs the kingdom of heaven? What do you mean, the kids? Children, what are the attributes of the children? Well, we are free to assign those attributes and say, this is what Jesus must have meant. And we've always done that because we don't have the luxury of an answer, right? Occam's razor would tell you, hey, okay, look at the point of least resistance, okay? What's the most simple explanation? Is it possible that the evangelists didn't write it down? Perhaps Jesus did give an explanation. And he said, you know, because kids are this way and these are the characteristics and the evangelists didn't write it down. Is that possible? Yes, it is. It is. Not everything that Jesus said was recorded by the evangelists. So that's a possibility there, right? But in this case, in the parable of the sower, we do have a recorded account of what Jesus said, what his explanation of the parable was. And that's what I want to share with you today, okay? Let's take a look at the parable of the sower, and it comes to us from Matthew chapter 13. It says, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into his boat and sat there while the whole crowd stood on the beach. He told them to listen. A sower went out to sow. Okay, for those of us who are not coming from agriculture, not grow up on a farm, basically, the sower is the guy who has the seeds. He goes out, and he's now going to plant the seeds, okay? A sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone who has ears listen. And this is the parable of the sower. Again, it appears in Matthew chapter 13. Now, unique to this parable is that there is a definition to it. There is an explanation. In fact, so unique is it that the evangelist Matthew takes an extra step and explains that the parables are not supposed to have explanations, but I'm giving you an explanation here just the same. In the following verses, he says, the disciples came and said, why do you speak to us in or to them in parables? And he answered, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. Sounds pretty harsh, doesn't it? The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing, they do not perceive, and hearing, they do not listen, nor do they understand. Now, what Jesus is talking about here, listen very carefully. I'm going to repeat it again. The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing, they do not perceive, and hearing, they do not listen, nor do they understand. What is he saying here? It's given to you, but you're not understanding. You're not open to it. And to those people, it's not going to be given anymore. What little that they do have is being taken away. If you have an opportunity to hear, listen. Open your hearing, open your eyes, and open your heart to that understanding. But he goes on to say here, blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you have seen, but they did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but they did not hear it. Hear then the parable of the sower. Interesting, huh? Jesus is now going to explain the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom of God and does not understand it, the evil comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. Remember the first seeds? They just went on the path and the birds ate them. They snatched them up. Let me repeat Jesus' answer to that. Anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. The seeds are in the heart, but you're not taking the time. You're not giving yourself a chance to let those seeds find a root. And you're not listening to it. You're not listening to your heart. Jesus is saying it right here, right? They're sown in your heart, but you're not giving it a chance. Here is the best, and I would tell you, the absolute best reason for time for yourself, reason for time for prayer, for time for meditation, time for inward introspection of what your life is about. As for the seeds, sown on rocky ground. Remember, that was the second one. These were the ones on rocky ground. The sun hit them and they baked. This is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root, but endures only for a while. And when trouble and persecution arise on account of the world, that person immediately falls away. Importance of roots. Importance of not just being sensationalized. We believe this. Okay, it's great. I just received it. Now I'm moving forward. No, you need some roots, and Jesus is calling for that. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. Take this back to what I was saying about unity, about the need to come together, the importance to be as one Christian family. If this is Christ's, truly Christ's church, how important it is for us to be united. But the cares of the world, Occam's razor, the point of least resistance. What is the answer? Well, it's real estate. It's money. You know what? Real estate, money is the solution to all of these problems. Why do you think it's not the solution to this unique problem that the church has? Basically, Christ's body that is divided. Can we find means of unity? Of course we can. Can we find means of giving up property? That's a difficult one. People don't want to hear that. But think about it for a moment, right? Think about it in terms of what Occam's razor says too, right? Among competing hypotheses. The competing hypotheses are what? Christianity is spiritual. There's a liturgical aspect to it. There's a theological aspect to it. We can't seem to find ground on theology. No, you can. You can. On competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. It's real estate. It's money. Who holds the money? This is why when I tell you about how important it is for us to abandon the hoopla and really listen to what Jesus is talking to our hearts. That's what's important and that's what matters. And so finally, Jesus turns and he talks about the ones that are sown on good soil. This is the one who hears the word and understands it, gives time for it to cultivate, who indeed bears fruit and yields. Oh, it's not enough to understand it. What? You've got to bear fruit and you've got to yield. In one case, 100-fold, in another 60, in another 30. The parable of the sower explained. Now, that entire chapter, it's very agrarian kind of concepts that he talks about. I invite you to read the entire chapter, but I wanted to share this particular message with you because Jesus gives an answer here. And if you look at it, when we look at Occam's razor, at looking at the one answer in our life, or in the case of unity that we've been talking about over here, because this, what I talk about, church unity, is really pertains to all of our issues in life. The one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. And I'm bringing this up especially because we're hitting on the season of Advent. We're hitting on the season where it's about giving. It's about understanding what are the dynamics at play. What causes us to give, to hold back? You've got to realize that, look at the answer with fewest assumptions. It's because of our greed. And we don't want to admit it. But that's what it is. And what stays in our pocket and what is released from our pocket. This was pretty heavy duty, and I'm picking on people, and I think we all need to be get a dose of being picked on, because really the one who picks on us is Christ. He's telling us that it's got to go beyond your pocket, okay? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about something really awe-inspiring. As opposed to what we were talking about our doing, what happens when God works within us? What happens when God is working and we give God the opportunity to come through us, to be revealed through us? Such is the case of Alma Dutcher. I think I pronounced her name right. It's Dutscher. A young musical protege who I got to know just last week, last Sunday evening on CBS's news magazine called 60 Minutes. And if you didn't see it, I'll definitely have a link on today's show notes. And I believe you'll be able to see the entire broadcast. If not, it's well worth whatever they do charge you to see it, because it is awe-inspiring. It makes you realize that God is speaking a very special language to us all. And just a matter of us being receptive to that. Alma Dutcher and her musical accomplishments. She's being compared to Mozart. Yes, Mozart. Yeah, no, the Mozart. Not Pablo Mozart, not Frank Mozart. No, Amadeus. Wolfgang Mozart. Yes, that one. Yes, really. I kid you not. There'll be links on today's show notes to all of this. Right now, we're going to hear a composition. It's hard to call it a song. It's really a creation. It is her reflecting that divine energy within her. This is Alma Dutcher doing her piece, Rondia, in E flat major, I believe it is. And if you have the opportunity to just close your eyes right now as you listen to it, it's 3 or 4 minutes long. Just close your eyes, relax, absorb it, and I'll meet you on the other end. Can you describe that? Heavenly? Divinely inspired? I'd do that. People with other backgrounds will use other adjectives, but in all things, it leaves us what? In awe. It leaves us in awe. Alma Dutcher, Rondino in E-flat major. There'll be a link on today's show notes. She's actually going to be performing in San Jose next month. I'm going to be in San Jose, not next Sunday, the following Sunday. If there is any possible way of getting up there for this concert, we're going to try to do our best to be up there. Just, it's awe-inspiring. It leaves us It leaves us mesmerized in tears, spiritual tears. And that's what we want to talk about in the second portion of today's show. As I was preparing for today's show, I was debating on which half of the show should we feature Alma Dutcher, because I do want to talk about what I did see and the importance of people like this. When you have an opportunity to be in the presence of a genius like that, or in your midst, and to realize that that genius is not too far away from you as well. And I debated which half of the show I really wanted to start off with her, saying that, wow, look at this, you know, and you get your people's attention. But then I needed the groundwork. And the parable of the sower was important, because there's the good seed and the ability for that good seed to have roots, right? Has to be built on something. And that good seed also has to be understood, so that it can be propagated. Alma Dutcher, I got to know her through this broadcast just a few days ago. Amazing. I sat in awe. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I thought to myself, you know, what was it like when a Mozart was around, when Bach was around? I mean, did people just sit there and were they in awe? Of course they were. How does so much beauty, how does so much music come out of one small individual like this? It gets you to thinking that, you know, is this something that, is God talking to this person? Is this innate? Or is it because of her circumstances? Is it just purely a behaviorist reaction to it, right? Her circumstances, her environment. Her parents didn't suppress some of the energy that was going through her. She didn't hear no, and so she produced. But as we know, there are so many examples against it, so many people who've been confounded with the no but have persevered. Closest we come to musically is probably the careers of Lennon and McCartney. When you listen to a Lennon and McCartney, what they have put together, I think together they've created some like 220 songs. Each one of them is a classic. And it's these tunes. Yesterday, all my troubles seems... I mean, I'll never forget that tune, Yesterday, for a very specific reason. My grandmother, who was 60 years my senior, would hum it. It went beyond generations. My grandmother, she would hum that song. I remember that as being a child and hearing the Beatles sing it, and my grandmother, it appealed to her. And when you look at this broad collection of music that two minds have put together, and then all of a sudden you hear this child prodigy. Here she is at age 6 composing. She's got a... I guess it would be an opera called Cinderella. In Cinderella, we find out, just like the story, the prince doesn't come around and looking for the person who fits the shoe, but rather finds a musician for whom his words, his poetry, fits her song. And this is the test of the shoe. This is the test that the prince does to the princess. Beautiful, right? And when you listen to the music, you realize that there is something beyond our understanding. Occam's razor. Given all sets of circumstances, right? Given many hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. The seed that is planted and is understood, that produces. Is it so wrong to say that We don't understand how it produces. We don't understand how these tunes come into the mind of a young child. If you get a chance to see that little clip that I play, it's interesting because she'll just be standing and the tunes come to her head. The melodies come to her head. And I remember and the reason why I selected the McCartney and Lennon comparison was that I remember an interview with Paul McCartney where he talked about that. Just the tune comes into his head. Or he wakes up and there it is. Okay, if the tune comes to the head, who's putting it in there? Is it just her faculties? Is it that she has different nerve endings? Or is there something beyond the physical? Now we're getting into our territory, which is called the God territory. Is there something beyond just the physical nerve endings inside the brain that are producing these melodies? And whether you say yes or no will put you on one side of the religion, no religion debate. But how about accepting what we would say in the Armenian Church, Chorut Chorin? It's a mystery. And is there something wrong with accepting mystery? In other words, to accept that we don't understand, that we don't get it. Occam's razor. Is it so wrong to say that, okay, given all the circumstances, all the different hypotheses, we'll select the one with the least amount of assumptions, basically that there is a God who has placed this beauty in her heart? And if so, why is she different than anyone else? She isn't. God places that in each of our hearts. How receptive are we? Yes, some of it is because of our upbringing, because of our environment, but we have so many examples where environment was overcome by a sheer willingness to listen to what the heart was saying. And those examples in the church we refer to as what? As saints, right? The example of the saints is nothing more than that. People who have listened to that melody inside of their heart and have pronounced it. They have sown the seed inside of their heart where it has roots, and they've watched it flourish. They've watched it come about. And you have that opportunity. You have that chance. We each do. We each are given that chance and that opportunity to connect to mystery. There was a quote by Albert Einstein, which we've heard many, many times. It's usually taken out of context, and I don't want to take it out of context, but I do want to refer to it because it refers to mystery. And it fascinates me because when you think of Albert Einstein, you think of the great solver who took physics and took the physics to its limits. But he was also a philosopher. He was also somebody who understood what the human passions were, who we were as people. And he says something very interesting. He says, the most beautiful thing. Now, this is a guy who's looked out into the heavens, who's explored and understands all of the complexities that are out there in the universe. And he says, the most beautiful thing that we can experience is the mysterious. I certainly agree with him when I heard this piece just now by Alma, right? Alma Dutcher's piece, after you hear it, listen to what Einstein says. The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. How often you try to explain it, you can't. There's a lot of things like that. Have you ever witnessed somebody with severe savant syndrome? Somebody who has savant syndrome is unable to do basic math. Right? 2 times 3 will yield, they'll say, 5, maybe 10, 2 times 3. And yet, they're able to rattle off pi to, you know, something like 100 decimals, 200 decimals, 1300 decimals. They're able to tell you the day of any particular, on a calendar, you select the day. November 9th, 1541, and they'll tell you what day of the week it was. They will sit down at a piano and start playing. And you say, where does this talent come from? And so too, when I heard Alma Dulce, where does it come from? Your mind begins to wonder, and then it's okay to say the mystery. It's okay to say that I don't understand. And if you can say that, that's the beginning of understanding God. Because God is basically something that we do not understand, and we label it as such. God is mystery, inscrutable, without beginning. When St. John the Evangelist says God is love, what is he saying? It's mystery. I don't understand love, the complexities of it. I see the ramifications of love. I know what it means to be in love. I know what it means to extend love, to practice love. But what is love? Can you explain it? Can you explain what is God? Albert Einstein, the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious, he says. It is the source of all true art and science. He to whom the emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. This is me talking to Albert Einstein, okay? The insight into the mystery of life, coupled, though it be with fear, has also given rise to religion. To know what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty, which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their most primitive forms. This knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. Albert Einstein. Interesting, because here's somebody that we tend to believe has figured it all out. And he takes pause to say, no, there is something beyond what we can figure out. And it's okay to call that religious. In fact, just this week, a remarkable supernova was discovered. And what scientists are calling it, it's like anything, it's unlike anything we have seen in the past. And particularly, this supernova happens to be 500 light years away. In other words, the light that left that nova 500 years ago is just now reaching us. And they've been studying this particular area since 1954 and realizing that there are things happening there that don't happen with other supernovas. And don't happen. They have no other record. Well, what does this mean? It means we're just evolving. It means that we're learning. We're experimenting. And isn't that what science is about? To throw it out, hypotheses, and figure it out. And all I'm saying today, in our state of mind, where we are today, is it okay to say that there is something that I don't understand, and to say because I don't understand it, I can label it as God, without fighting wars for it, but to understand that that God is bigger than myself. And that God is what is at the core. It is at the center of all creativity, of all beauty, and the things that I can't understand, but I can sure appreciate. Because they open my heart to a power that's bigger than me. When I talk to you about Armadoxy, when I talk about to you about this Christianity without the hoopla, I want to believe that Christ, when he came, it wasn't to get us to fight wars for him or to set us apart from others, but to understand that within each of us there is this potential for greatness, that we can all hum those beautiful songs. And for some, it may be hummed in the form of an aria. For others, it might be sung in the form of the work that you do, in the jewel that you produce as a jeweler, in the car that you fix as a mechanic, in the life that you touch as a priest. Each of us is invited to life with our unique set of talents and God talking to us, with a seed sown in our hearts, asking for us to understand, and in that understanding for us to produce. You know, we are almost at the beginning of the Advent season. It is Christmas season upon us. It is a time for us as Christians, as Armenian Orthodox Christians, for us to understand that there is a privilege to being a Christian, and that privilege is in the giving, in the loving, in the sharing with others. And I give this to you today as a lesson, as a prelude to this beautiful season that's upon us. Susie is here with her message, and we got the piano player back. Yeah, I don't, we were missing you last week. What happened? Yeah. And we had the marimbas and all that. Anyway, Susie's back, so is the piano player, and here's her message.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
So, you know, we're just finishing up a beautiful time, an inspirational time, with His Holiness Karekin II being here in Southern California. And so last Friday, as we were saying goodbye to him, he stopped me as I went to pay my respects. He stopped me and he says, "Keep up the good work," with a smile on his face. And I was so honored. I mean, he gestured to one of the shows that I had done and said, "Echmiadzin." And I knew exactly which episode he was talking about. Actually, it was used in a promotion for our 90th anniversary over here. So very honored, very humbled that he would remember something like this, and he would take a moment to share his enthusiasm for it. And I want to thank all of you because you've made this happen. It's phenomenal, really. What we're trying to do is make a virtual church, a church that goes beyond geography and touches people in a unique manner, that is a lesson, that is a point of inspiration, that shares some ideas. And that's what the Next Step is about. It's taking the next step in our faith. Where do we go with what we have learned? What do we do with what we have learned? That's the next step. It's taking the next step of faith, okay? It's one thing to read your Bible. It's one thing to go to church. But Christianity is acting upon it. And certainly In His Shoes is the means by which we do that. In His Shoes reaches out to people who otherwise cannot be reached, are not reached, are forgotten about. And you know how it goes, right? We've been doing this now for 10 years. Been doing this even longer as In His Shoes. And really, the one thing that I request of you is that you remember us in your prayers. That's it. That's what I need right now. Because in the next few weeks, we're going to be getting ready for the Christmas season. We've got so much going on, and I need your prayers that God bless us as He has been blessing us through the years. And we invite your participation in any way that you can. But most importantly, keep us in your prayers. Okay, that's it. We're going to call it a day today. And do connect with us in all the usual fashions. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Follow us. Whatever you need to do, do connect with us. Oh, yeah, thank you. Yes, Ken just looked over and pointed to the P.O. box. If you want to write to us, yes, we do have a P.O. box. Thank you, Ken. P.O. Box 70773, Pasadena, California, 91117. How's that? In His Shoes, P.O. Box 70773. 3. Pasadena 91117. That's, of course, in California. So now we'll do it. For the wonderful team who brought today's show to you, for Ken, our engineer, Susie, our producer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
To ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.